Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. I am Jeff Meller, hanging out at Rate Field, getting set for game number two of this three-game series of the opening home series of the 2026 schedule, White Sox and Blue Jays. Bring everyone out to the ballpark tomorrow for Family Sundays, presented by Coca-Cola. Enjoy family-friendly activities. Plus, kids can run the bases after the game. Tickets start at just $12. To learn more and purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/Sunday. As I mentioned, Chris Getz met with the media yesterday prior to the game and hit on a wide array of topics. And one of the first things to be addressed was the inconsistency and struggles that Shane Smith has had here early on, in particular with that four-seam fastball.
Really, his four-seam fastball, commanding it, having the confidence in it, it really hasn't been there. And it was such an effective pitch for him last year. I mean, it was one of the top four-seam fastballs in baseball. He did not have that as a weapon right now. It just doesn't allow him to attack and navigate lineups. And, you know, we've kind of paid the price because of it. So, you know, we have to get that right. We do. We're doing everything we can to, get him back on track. But that's something that needs to be addressed.
I think now it's kind of giving him runway to do it. You know, he's a guy you believe in, but also you guys have done interventions in the past in terms of, like, pulling a guy out or working on thing focus, like how do you weigh when the time is right to consider yourself?
Yeah, I mean it's there's a myriad of factors in which you look at. You look at where the delivery is, you look at how the ball is traveling out of his hand, the pitch characteristics. There's a psychological component to it. So we're still working through all of that. Some of it's conversations with him. Some of it's looking at the biomechanic information. All right, how do we unwind what's been wound up? And, so we're still working through that right now.
What have you seen from Acuna defensively and just how he's carved out his role here?
Yeah, I think he's done a really nice job. You know, we've asked him to play center field and in shortstop. There's been a couple moments more on the throwing side that we feel like is, could improve a little bit, which is not too surprising. But overall, you know, how low maintenance he is and his ability to play multiple positions and being able to get that speed into the lineup, you know, the other night pretty much created a run on his own, you know, four pitch walk, stealing, you know, second base, third base, and then a short sack fly. It shows what he's capable of doing. I know he's working on, you know, the swing adjustments that they were dialed in on during spring training. We love having him as a weapon, and we're going to continue to develop him as his defensive skills in the outfield and play him, occasionally in the infield as well.
Hey, Chris, when your ERA is three runs higher than the next worst team, even after six games, do you just try to be like, okay, well, that's not going to last. We know that that's a little bit of an outlier. Do you try to take the positive side of it?
Well, yeah, we know that's not going to last. You've got to look under the hood on why is this happening, and Shane being a primary example of not being able to use the four-seam fastball right now or get a better version of it. You know, that's led to, some of the bleeding, you know, considering he's made two starts for us right now. These guys, you know, they got to attack the zone. And, you know, we've had some starts, too, where we put up some runs and then, you know, a four-pitch walk to lead off of an inning. And those are areas that need to be attacked. But we certainly don't need to get ahead of ourselves and start, you know, doing significant interventions, so to speak. It's more, you know, all right, tweak this, tweak that. Today, for example, we've got Grant Taylor, taking a bump out of the gate, to perhaps allow, you know, Sean Burke to go deeper into the game today. And we've done that in the past, just to kind of, get them out of the first inning and let them settle in and go deeper into games for us. So that's something we're doing today, and we've had success doing that in the past. So, assessing all of this, but the starting pitching is definitely an area that we're focused on the most right now.
What about the opponent's base running? It's been a bugaboo for this team in the past. Do you think that's going to be cleaned up here after kind of a wonky start for holding runners on, throwing runners out. Is that part of too many runners on base, or the fact that that still has to be cleaned up?
If you're not commanding, you know, the baseball in the zone as a pitcher, you know, it's unfortunately it sometimes, you know, starts going into controlling the running game. They're so focused on, you know, getting in the zone that they're not as concerned about the base running. So I would say that the most important thing is get these pitchers in the zone, attacking the zone with their best stuff. And then, you know, once we establish that, then we can get into, you know, controlling the running game in a greater fashion, which has been a priority for us. But that really isn't what's held us back so far as much as getting in the strike zone.
Do you feel like that's part of, like, some of the defensive issues we've had earlier in terms of just team not being in rhythm, or you can kind of see this as a younger group that would take some time to hit their defensive stride? Like, what degree is it a surprise that they come out of the gate struggling a little bit defensively?
I mean, as a whole, it's still a very young roster, you know, on the starting pitching front, position player front, and with younger players, there's oftentimes a wider variance of outcomes, and guys are still getting settled in and finding their rhythm during the season. We know that will get cleaned up just with more games, with more reps. You know, it's a very capable defensive club. You know, I know that the ball hitting the right center the other night between Peters and Acuna, obviously that was a letdown that led to a bigger inning. But if you look at the ability to get to that baseball, it wasn't, you know, as high of a catch probability as one would think just by watching it. So that just shows what they're capable of doing, and obviously converting those into outs is what makes those players valuable to this team. But it's getting comfortable playing with each other. You know, some of these guys are – this is the first time they played in the big leagues, or even on this team or with some of these teammates. So – you're going to take your lumps along the way, but it will get cleaned up. I'm very confident in that. You look at, you know, the will, the staff that we have, you know, the character and work ethic of some of these guys. You know, I've got a lot of faith that things will certainly improve here.
Philosophically, a lot of people might not always agree with moving players around all the time. Maybe if they're really accomplished in a lot of positions, they're better on it. How do you look at that, you know, the continuing moving Montgomery up and back between third and short, and, you know, Acuna being a very good middle infielder trying to learn center field?
Yeah, I think it's good. It's really good for them, for their careers. I do, and they're very capable of doing it. I mean, Colson has shown that. He did it last year. He's done well defensively so far with what we've asked him to do from shortstop and third base, and yeah, candidly, Acuna has as well. So, you know, you're looking to, you know, put together the best lineup on a daily basis. And, you know, sometimes you may optimize the defense over the offense for certain days. But, you know, conditioning and developing these guys to you know, for the remainder of this year, but for their careers, not only with the White Sox, which is in baseball, to be able to play multiple positions and do it well. You look around the league and, you know, it's not uncommon. It isn't. And where we are right now is these guys are learning and forming. You know, as players at such a high level, this versatility is going to help not only them, but certainly the White Sox too.
What's about Teal's status? How's he coming along?
Yeah, Teal's doing well, and he's continuing to progress on his rehab, and you know, we'll figure out the right time to send him out on his rehab assignment. But he's in a good place right now.
Mooney's looked pretty good. What stood out to his at bat? Maybe anything surprised you in 6 games?
You know, I surprised in perhaps a really good way. You know, when you look at some of the arms that we faced, and Mizorowski, you know, I think is really the prime example of, you know, game one. You've got a pitcher that he hasn't faced before with really high octane stuff, 100 plus miles an hour with some breaking pitches to take his walks, and not just go up there and kind of, you know, that all or nothing approach, which, you know, wouldn't have been uncommon for any player, but for someone with you know, that comes over and is you know, in the big leagues for the first time, obviously with a storied career over in Japan, to face the pitcher that he did and have the calmness in the box, I was really impressed with that. And he's continued to have quality at-bats throughout. So I'll take it as a pleasant surprise, but that just speaks to, you know, the player and person that he is and what he's capable of doing at this level.
Chris, I saw Mike was around. Have you talked to him about how his surgery went?
Pardon me?
Mike Vassell, I saw he was around. Have you talked to him about his surgery went?
He's done well, and you know, he's on the mend, and you know, I know he's determined to kick butt in the rehab, and you know, he's around this club because, you know, of his positive nature and what he, you know, brings to this clubhouse. So we don't feel like we've lost in that front. Unfortunately, you know, we want to have Mike Vassell pitching on the mound for us this year.
What's been your initial thoughts, Chris, about ABS and seeing it in use now? And has anything you've seen changed maybe the team approach to how you might want to employ challenges to ensure you have them available late in games?
Yeah, overall, I think the system is working pretty well. You know, it in regards to adjusting our strategy at this point, I think it... we're not quite there yet. I think, you know, our guys have a pretty good idea of when a good time is to use the challenge and when not to. So I've been pretty happy how it's been used on our front. And I think the overall strategy, you know, it's still going to take time to develop, because I do think that umpires are going to adjust as well. They've already shown that a little bit. So to be really disciplined and strict on one strategy, I think it's a little premature, other than, you know, our guys getting more and more comfortable with understanding what this strike zone is right now.
I think, to be fair to Edgar, being 4-for-10 without context is not fair, but is there anything he needs to sharpen up on? What do you with those challenges?
Yeah, more importantly for us and just in his continual development is, you know, his framing ability and getting those calls. And that's something that we've really prioritized on. So to get off course and focus more on the ABS challenging approach, I think is not right. I think it's more, let's secure these strikes that are supposed to be strikes and perhaps get some strikes that aren't and, you know, kind of take it from there. Foundationally, I think that's the right approach.
Chris, with the pitching struggling, people are going to ask why wait to bring up Schultz and McDougal.
Sure.
How do you feel about that situation?
You know, we'll talk about Noah and all those guys, Tanner included, off to really good starts. And, you know, there's been two starts for Noah and Hagen. Noah up to 97, 98 in the fifth inning. He looks like he's, you know, after last year battling, you know, a bit of a knee issue, he looks like he's back and ready to go. Multiple pitches. He's got his cutter working, some real velocity and command. So that's been really good to see. And Hagen, you know, has been doing well. His outings are only at 3 innings right now. We're going to continue to build that. And Tanner's about to take, you know, start two. So, we know those guys are there. You know, to have three significant arms like that at the AAA level is very comforting as we're navigating, you know, looking into the future of this season. But certainly don't feel like it's the right time to bring those guys. We want to make sure that those guys are throwing multiple pitches, being able to navigate, you know, both-sided hitters, turn lineups over. You know, you don't want it to get too jumpy. I know it can be enticing to bring those pitchers up, but these guys are such a significant part of the future of the White Sox. We want to handle this, you know, with care and making sure that they're ready when they come here.
Chris, a year ago, you didn't have Mooney, obviously. You didn't have Colson working his way through some struggles. And a lot of unknown at that point a year ago. What's it like in this phase now where you're getting some of these building blocks up and you're seeing kind of the fruits of these labors?
Yeah, I mean, I you know, in spring training, looking out of the field, and I remember talking to Will about it, and, yeah, the uncertainty of a shortstop position and where Colson was at. You know, having two young catchers that we didn't have out of the gate last year, and obviously Kyle's, you know, banged up right now, so he's not out there. You know, Miguel Vargas taking another, you know, step forward from what he did a year ago, which was a positive after coming over in a trade. And then you add a Murakami and, you know, kind of the unknown and, you know, the upside of what he could bring to the table and what he's shown so far. So there's certainly plenty of building blocks and exciting things to point to on this field. But, you know, we've got to get the starting pitching right, settle in to really help us utilize the bullpen that we have and go out there and win more baseball games.
Chris, would it be fair to say that with Hagen and Noah,
that you're past the point of having to follow a certain progression with those guys, that if the need arises and you think you're ready to meet that need, you green light it?
Yeah, if, when we feel like they're ready, they'll be up here. We don't feel like they're ready quite yet. We don't feel like it's the right time. Candidly, regardless of how things are going up here, if they are not ready, they're not coming up here. If they're down there and they are performing well, and there's confidence not only in the player but the staff, front office, we feel like they're in a really good place. They come up here because we know long term that it's going to be best for their careers.
Chris, despite the slow start, do you feel like there's one area or identity of this team that the home fans will be able to see shine through compared to last year?
Well, I think, you know, we were able to show it in spring training. We just haven't been able to do it so far, you know, in the early, you know, the first week of the season. And, you know, the ability to create runs offensively, you know, whether it be, you know, laying bunts down, some situational hitting runs, taking extra bases, stealing bases, that aggressiveness that we were showing just a couple weeks ago. We just haven't found that rhythm yet. So that's the style of baseball that we feel like is going to play out this year and this season and this summer. And on top of that, there's some real power that's going to complement that style of play. So, it's going to be an enjoyable team to watch. We just need certain areas to get settled in first.
Venable said the other day and then again today that not only the players have to do better, but he has to do better. Do you think that's just being a good leader on his part saying that, or do you think by him saying today that he needs maybe to communicate better, that's just a part of his continuous growth as a manager?
Yeah, I think that's a humble leader talking, but what he brings to the table is the steadiness and the optimism, he's got ownership in all of this, and that's what makes him a quality leader. So I think he's being a little overly critical of himself. I think it's, you know, not, that's an unfair assessment, but I do appreciate, you know, that approach. We're excited to be home. You know, we're excited to be here and have opening day with our fans. Our team last year, I pointed back to the City Connect nights, those Friday nights, and the fans really, really getting behind this team and our young players responding well and playing well. And now to get that chance, you know, starting today is something that, you know, I'm really looking forward to watching.
Chris, but is there anything about this ballpark that might be particularly conducive and favorable for this game?
You know, he's got significant power in which, I don't think that there's, when he connects with a baseball, there's a stadium that's going to prevent him from hitting home runs. I know, you know, the month of July is a significant month for balls traveling here. Some of this is just weather dependent, whether it's playing as a hitter's ballpark or maybe more neutral. But I think this is a good place to hit for him. I really do. The way he drives ball to left center and connecting on it, you know, on the pull side. So, you look back at some of the power hitters that have played in this stadium, the success that they've had. I think Murakami fits into that mold.
You've got Antonacci and Bergoglio both had great springs. With all the young guys playing up here now, how do you go about figuring out which one of those guys is your best long-term solution?
Yeah, I mean, we love their style of play, and I think most people that have watched those players play understand that we view them as long-term fits with the Chicago White Sox. Some of it's just continual development. Some of it's opportunity. We've got Antonacci, you know, playing some outfield. He played second base last night. He's got some history playing shortstop and some third base as well. So, this is the first time they played in AAA. We want them to get regular at-bats there. And as time passes, I think opportunities will open up. And, we won't hesitate to grab them when the time is right.
So there you go. That was, I think for some White Sox fans, that might be encouraging to hear Chris Getz say that when the time is right, he won't be afraid to call up Noah Schultz, Hagan Smith, and Tanner McDougall. And I thought that was important to note because that in the early going here has been a source of frustration for White Sox fans, the pitching not really coming through early on here, especially when you have three highly touted arms like the Sox do available at AAA. The instant knee-jerk reaction is to say, hey, we got to get those guys up. Look, you heard Chris Getz talk about it. Ultimately, I know everybody wants that instant gratification, but that's probably not best for the careers long-term of Schultz, Smith, and McDougal. You need to make sure that they're ready. You heard Chris Getz talk about what they're looking for. When they come up to the majors, the idea is for them to be completely ready to potentially have some struggles, maybe fail a bit, but be able to be resilient enough to bounce back to the point where you don't need to send them back down to the minors. So for anybody out there who's saying, hey, get Smith up here, get Schultz up here, get McDougal up here, trust me, ultimately, long-term, the White Sox want them to be up here as quickly as possible, but they don't want them having to go back down to the minors because they're not ready yet. So that is the idea there, and you heard some of that there from Chris Getz. Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly. When we come back, we'll get you set with the lineups for today's day. And also, as I mentioned, big news out here at the ballpark yesterday when it was announced that Ozzie Guillen's number 13 will be retired later in the season. We'll let you hear some sounds from the ballpark yesterday regarding Ozzie when we come back right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Sox games on the go, the ESPN Chicago app.
Sox fans, join us at the ballpark on Friday, April 24th, as the White Sox take on the Washington Nationals at 6:40 p.m. First 10,000 fans will receive a Miguel Vargas bobblehead presented by Fanatics. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. Jeff Meller live here at Rate Field. The rain is slowing down. Blue Jays players out on the field warming up as we speak, and the grounds crew is attempting to clear the water off of the tarp over the infield right now. As I mentioned, rain's still coming down ever so slightly, but it is definitely slowing. So hopefully we'll be set to go here for the 1:10 first pitch time that is scheduled right now. Lineups in for today for the White Sox: Chase Meidroth back in the leadoff spot at second base. Lenin Sosa enters the lineup today as your designated hitter batting second. Miguel Vargas bats third. He'll man third base. Munetaka Murakami will clean up today. The lefty Japanese slugger has first base. Austin Hayes will bat fifth in left field. Colson Montgomery, the shortstop, drops down to sixth. He is left-handed. Luis Angel Acuna moves up a few spots. He's going to be inner center fielder. He's going to be in center field today and bat seventh. Reese McGuire gets the plate today. He is left-handed. And then Tristan Peters, yesterday's hero, earns another start. He'll be in right field again. For the Blue Jays, it will be George Springer in his customary leadoff role as the designated hitter. Davis Schneider, the left fielder, will be batting second. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. playing first base, batting third. Speaking of third, the third baseman, Kaz Akimoto, will hit cleanup today and bat fourth. Dalton Varsho is in center fielder. He is batting fifth and playing left field. Ernie Clements will be at second base hitting sixth. Miles Straw in right field batting seventh. Andres Jimenez, the lefty shortstop, bats eighth. And then Tyler Heineman is going to be doing the catching, batting ninth. And as I mentioned earlier, Alejandro Kirk was placed on the injured list by the Blue Jays due to the fractured left thumb that he suffered late in the game yesterday, which forced him out of the game and obviously now onto the injured list for the Blue Jays. I also mentioned Patrick Corbin, the veteran, was signed by the Blue Jays. They announced after the game yesterday. Obviously, the White Sox will not be seeing him in this series as he's going to have to ramp up and make a few starts in the minors before the Blue Jays actually call him up to the majors. So that is your starting lineup. I mentioned big day here at the ballpark, not just because of the win, but also the big surprise news that we got in the middle of the third inning. If you missed it, I will share that with you when we come back right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Jeff Meller back here at Rate Field as we are getting set for game number 2 of 3 between the White Sox and Blue Jays here this weekend, opening week for the 2026 season. The rain has officially stopped, folks, and it looks like the grounds crew here is getting set to take the tarp off the field under the guidance of Roger Bossard. White Sox honored Roger Bossard before the game yesterday, too. If you were here, you saw it, but if you missed it, the longtime grounds crew will begin his 60th season working for the White Sox this year. He was also inducted into the Groundskeeper Hall of Fame back in December of last year in 2025 in Toronto. So the White Sox honored Roger Bossard before the game, and obviously part of the reason we feel so confident that this game is going to get started exactly when it needs to is because of all the great work that Roger Bossard does. Speaking of honors, if you were here at the park, you also saw yesterday a pretty cool moment in between the top and bottom of the third inning, as in the stadium here and on CHSN, the White Sox informed Ozzie Guillen of a great honor for him.
The Chicago White Sox announced today that 2005 World Series winning manager Ozzie Guillen will be honored on Saturday, August 8th.
I know the bobblehead.
With a special ceremony retiring his number 13 uniform.
No way.
The shortstop who played for 13 seasons with the White Sox will be the 13th player in franchise history to have his number retired and first manager.
Oh, that is amazing.
Mr. Ozzie Guillen, your legacy will be forever etched.
You heard the crowd chanting, Ozzie, Ozzie, there. It was a pretty cool moment here in the stadium. If you missed it, wish you were here. But it was an awesome, cool moment. Great surprise. You heard first, if you caught it, Ozzie saying another bobblehead. Like, obviously, he didn't know it was coming. It was pretty cool. He got very emotional. He called for his wife on set to join him on CHSN, and she came over, and he was clearly overtaken by emotion, tears. He was very happy and excited, and it was a pretty cool moment here. You even heard you heard Chuck there too. He was surprised. I mean, we kind of knew that this was a possibility. I think a lot of people who cover the team, you know, thought that this might be something that would be happening at some point here. But you never just really know until the announcement is officially made. And so it was a pretty cool thing to witness here at the stadium. It was a pretty cool way to have Scott Podsednik unveil it to Ozzie. And I haven't had a chance to speak with Scotty Podsednik, but I don't think he knew. I think he was reading that blind as well. The White Sox organization did a great job of keeping it under wraps. Credit to Brooks Boyer and his entire team for pulling off a pretty cool moment here, in addition to a great win for the White Sox, a great moment for the organization to let Ozzie Guillen know that number 13 is going to be retired. If you missed it, they mentioned it there. It's going to be on August 8th this year, 6:10 first pitch against Cleveland on Saturday. So make sure that, I have to imagine that it's going to be a hot ticket. So if you want tickets, I would advise you go ahead and grab them now. They're available at whitesox.com. Again, it's Saturday, August 8th. So make sure you grab your tickets. Score all of the season's biggest games at an unbeatable value with a ticket plan. Enjoy flexible payments, easy ticket exchanges, and exclusive perks all year long. For more information, visit whitesox.com/ticket plans or call or text 312-674-1000. Ozzie made the rounds. He met the media for a while after that announcement. He then went on CHSN, and then shortly after that, he joined Len Casper and Darren Jackson right here on your home of the White Sox, ESPN 1000.
How you feeling?
Oh, my God. I'm kind of numb right now. The way they did it, that was more special. I think it was a big surprise. Obviously, between our family, we always talk about that. And to me, the biggest thing about how my number retired is like it wasn't for my grandkids. You know, I want them to, when they walk to this ballpark, they look over there and say, hey, that's your grandkid, your grandfather there. And that's one thing I was hopefully making happen quicker, because I want a lot of my friends, the guy I grew up with, they're still alive, they're still in, and I want them to enjoy that moment with me.
give us the number 13, what it means to you and how you got it and all of that.
Well, I grew up watching David Combs playing all my life. And that's the guy I always look up to it. You know what I mean? I was a lucky man because how many kids in their life you admire somebody or is your hero and all of a sudden you're going to be laying your life one of your best friends? You know what I mean? Just not that many kids can they say, you know what, this is my hero, but now one of my best friends. Thank God it's a lot better now. He was in bad shape a couple last year and he's got better. I just talked to him a couple nights ago. But 13, besides that, when I come to the Chicago White Sox, number 9 was retired by Mini. Then I said right away, give me number 13 because they don't want to use number 13 in San Diego Padres for whatever reason was. They said, no, we don't have that number. You're like, in the minor league. So, okay. Then I was number 9. Then when I got to big league, number 9 was what retired, and I got number 13.
Well, you know, your connection to this city, because you are part of this city, the fabric of this city from when you played, when you managed, but you live here, and you've lived here for a long time now. You're part of this. You talked about your grandchildren coming into this stadium and seeing your number on that facade now and your name next to it. They will be here and be able to see it on a regular basis.
Barshow hits a ground ball up the middle, gloved by Montgomery, 2 down.
Because your family is part of this community now.
Always, always. A lot of people say, well, are you crazy? How you stay in Chicago with the weather? I love Chicago, man. You know, we move, everybody move. We live together here in the suburbs, and I have a great time here. The people, the respect is mutual. You know what I mean? Just something. My kids like, all grow up here. My grandkids are going to be Illinois, Chicago people. And this town, to me, is a lot. I mean, especially when you're coming from another country. You base in some places, so you can base any place you want. But in the end of the day, I appreciate what Chicago people, fans, north side, south side, east, whatever it is, the respect they have for me and the love they have for myself is mutual. You know what I mean? I love them a lot, and the respect they have and the love they have is just something you cannot take it with you. It's just special. You know what I mean? Just the love I have from the people in the streets, in the golf course, anywhere I go. It's mean to me a lot. That's one of the biggest reasons we stay here in Chicago.
We're with Ozzie Guillen. Big news today. White Sox announcing his number 13 will be retired in August. The 0-2 is high. We're near the end of the inning, hopefully, here. But we have to mention one name, Jerry Reinsdorf. What does he mean to you?
Oh, wow. I told Jerry it's a joke. I told Jerry I love you more than my own dad. And he looked at me and said, what? I said, yeah, I love you. I said, why? Every time my daddy called me, he asked me for money. Every time you call me, you got to give me money. And that's a joke. But this guy gave me opportunity. He's a player. He's a manager. He's a broadcast. You know me, doing my job on TV. He gave me all the chance I have in baseball.
Okamoto strikes out swinging. We've hit the stretch. Ozzie, congrats, man.
Hey,
we're so, so happy for you.
Love you, Ozzie. Congratulations.
I'm with you for a long time. And my man here for a long, long time.
It was fun to see Ozzie yesterday. Obviously, he was very excited getting the great news that his number 13 will be retired later this season. Again, August 8th. That is a Saturday. That's going to be Ozzie Guillen Day. Tickets are available at WhiteSox.com. So make your plans now. Do so quickly because I have to imagine the tickets are going to be going quickly. So if that's something you would like to attend, make sure you make your plans early and get all your crew ready to go because it's going to be a blast here out at the ballpark. Just as I'm sure it's going to be a blast here today. As the White Sox and Blue Jays get set for the second of their 3-game series here in the opening series of the weekend at Wrigley Field. I'm Jeff Meller. When we come back, lots of interesting things from around the majors as well that I want to hit on here for a moment. We'll do it all here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
White Sox Weekly with Connor McKnight.
On the home of the White Sox.
ESPN Chicago, Chicago's home for sports.
For over 45 years, Food and Paper Supply Company has been the local leader in food service distribution. We're proud to partner with and service the Chicago White Sox and restaurants throughout Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana. At Food and Paper Supply, we're committed to getting you the products you want, including fresh poultry, beef, pork, shrimp, and produce, plus frozen fries, appetizers, dairy products, oils,
and a full line of carry-out packaging. Our cash-and-carry retail store is open to the public with wholesale pricing. Go to foodandpaper.com. That's foodandpaper.com for service and products beyond compare.
If you want free lifetime maintenance, free air, and flat repair, Bell Tire is your one-stop shop. But if you wanted to go elsewhere, you could. You'd just have to make three more stops. Then explain what you need three more times to six different people with 12 new opinions, four of which contradicts each other, which means you'll have to stop two more places, wait in line seven more times, and do nine more. Or you could stop once at Bell Tire. Visit your neighborhood Bell Tire or belltire.com.
Bell Tire.
Another hospital bill from the accident and another letter from the insurance company.
Did you call them?
Three times this week. I keep getting transferred. Nobody will tell me anything.
Who is it?
Postman Law, injury and accident attorneys. Put down the bills. Hang up the phone. We'll handle the insurance company, help you find the right doctors, and be your one call for answers. Injured in an accident? Postman Law delivers peace of mind. Call 844-POSTMAN or visit postmanlaw.com. No fee unless we win. Attorney advertising.
Hey fans, John Kuhn here, team captain of the Potawatomi Sportsbook. And there's a reason it's considered the Midwest's premier place to bet on all your favorite sports. The full bar, awesome dining, 2,000 square foot screen, and nearly 100 betting kiosks makes for an unbeatable playbook. Bet above the rest, only at Potawatomi Sportsbook in Milwaukee. More info online, must be 21 to enter casino.
We're with Bridget, whose husband won't be home for months, and whose daughter is due any day. We're with Mike, who's leaving home to protect his family and yours. We're with all service members and their families who need community, connection, and maybe a bit of magic. Are you with them? Learn more at USO.org today. We're with Liam after his fourth military move, when being new is starting to get old. We're with Tara during the holidays, when she misses home the most. We're with all service members and their families who need connection, comfort, and a home away from home. Are you with them? Learn more at USO.org today.
It's four words no parent should ever hear. Your child is sick. It's four words that change everything. Those four words can define a family. It's four words that are filled with pain, heartache, and grief. And with those four words, the innocence and joy of childhood disappears. But Starlight has taught us four other words that make all the difference. The power of play. Healing begins with happiness. That's why Starlight Children's Foundation delivers happiness through gaming, toy deliveries, and more to 3 million kids at more than 700 hospitals across the country to deliver happiness when it matters most. Learn more at starlight.org.
The home of the Sox. This is ESPN Chicago.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. I'm Jeff Meller, live at Wright Field as we are awaiting the game number two of three, scheduled to start at 1:10 today. Rain has stopped, so looks like hopefully we should be in good shape to start this one as originally scheduled. And again, the forecast looks good the rest of the day. I was just waiting for the rain to officially stop, and it looks like it has. So hopefully we'll get things going at 1:10 and have another White Sox winner. Hopefully the White Sox can start a win streak after yesterday's win. Sox fans head down to the ballpark on Saturday, April 25th, as the White Sox take on the Washington Nationals at 3:10. 15,000 fans, 21 years and older, will receive a 90s City Connect jacket presented by Miller Lite. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. How about, not sure if you saw the debut we had yesterday, but it was highly anticipated. We had a teenager make his major league debut, first teenager since Juan Soto did it back in 2018. Speaking of Soto, real quickly, he left last night's game against the Giants for the Mets with right calfness tightness. So I'll keep you updated if I see any info on him. But he had to leave the game in the first. But yes, Juan Soto debuted in the majors as a teenager. And yesterday for the Pittsburgh Pirates, we had 19-year-old Connor Griffin, the undisputed top overall prospect in all of baseball, make his major league debut in Pittsburgh. And yep, the kid looks ready.
The base hit to right field. Griffin can fly. Runner going to be waved. Here's the throw. And he scores head first. How do you like the script so far? 2-0.
So that was actually Griffin showing off the speed. But how about the kid coming through in the moment with his first at bat against a pretty good pitcher in Kyle Bradish? His first at bat, down 1-2 in the count, and Connor Griffin showed why he is major league ready.
Left center field, carrying it in the gap. Connor Griffin into second. Runner waved. Here's the throw. 1-0. Do you believe it?
It is the first time that a 19-year-old has had an extra base hit in his debut since Jerickson Profar did it back in 2012. Profar, probably not the player you want to be mentioned with these days, obviously, as he got hit for his second PED suspension. But, hey, baseball history, you can't do anything about who you're, the greats that you are, you know, the numbers that you're matching. But I will just tell you, Connor Griffin, kid is extremely impressive, an absolute physical freak. And Paul Skeens was must-see TV every fifth day for the Pirates. It looks like Connor Griffin is going to make them must-see TV the other four, because he is excellent. He's a shortstop. He has every tool. And what's crazy is that he was in his draft class, a lot of people thought he was raw and might take some time. And that's part of the reason why I think he actually fell a little bit in the draft class. But he has proven that he is somebody who is mature beyond his years. He's actually, I mentioned, he's 19, a little bit of surprise. He's married. I don't know if you know this, but he's already married. Paul Skeens talked about his maturity as a person and just how, if you want to do something, I'm paraphrasing Paul Skeens, if you want to do something extraordinary, you have to be extraordinary. And he certainly looks like he is. So it was fun to watch that yesterday. As the White Sox game was actually wrapping up and heading into extra innings, I had one eye looking at watching Connor Griffin's first at bat, and it was a pretty cool moment. Not a pretty cool moment in Kansas City, though, on Wednesday afternoon. The Royals had an afternoon game, and it was an afternoon game after a night game. So pretty standard across baseball. Very rare will you have a catcher catch back-to-back days anymore, day game after a night game. I mean, it's been like that for probably 25 years now, it feels like, at the very least. And so it's a no-brainer. Salvador Perez started Tuesday night for the Royals. And so Carter Jensen, who is a rookie hitter for the Royals, who has a really good bat to the point where, you know, he's not just a backup catcher, but he also is frequently in the Royals lineup as a DH when Salvi is catching. A lot of times Jensen will DH, and then obviously the plan is Jensen will catch the games that Perez does not, and then oftentimes Salvador Perez will then be the DH. Makes all the sense in the world, right? Well, Carter Jensen is 23 years old, and it was not a good day for the youngster on Wednesday afternoon. And I think a lot of people can probably relate to this. You don't have to be a baseball player, but there's always that moment, right, when, yeah, for whatever reason, maybe you didn't sleep well, maybe you got to bed too late, whatever it happens to be, but you sleep through the alarm. I think we all have probably been there. If you're old enough, you've done it at least once in your life, and it is the worst feeling in the world. And let me tell you, it has got to be a terrible feeling for a catcher who is slated to start, again, day game after the night game. That was the case in Kansas City on Wednesday afternoon. Carter Jensen overslept, did not make it to the clubhouse for the call time. And that was alarming, not just because Carter Jensen wasn't there when he was supposed to be making the start, but it also had a lot of Carter Jensen's Royals teammates very worried. Vinny Pasquantino elaborates after the game on Wednesday.
First and foremost, we're glad Carter's okay, right? I mean, that was kind of the initial thought when you're trying to get a hold of his parents and everything like that, to just make sure everything's okay. But once you find out he's okay, it's like, all right, it's a growing moment. He's really young. There are some things that cannot happen, and that's one of them. So he's going to have to wear it on the chin, the same way anybody would have to. So it can't happen. And, you know, hopefully it doesn't happen again. But it's one of those things that you can't afford mistakes like that in this game. So just gotta move forward the best that he can. I know he feels really bad. I know that it was not his favorite drive to the field this morning, but it wasn't our favorite morning either, trying to figure out what was going on. So, you know, he'll learn from it and grow up a little bit. And, you know, we're here for him, though. It's not like anybody's, you know, mad at him. Things happen, but you got to learn from mistakes like that and maybe get another alarm clock or something at home.
So there you go, Vinny Pasquantino. And what I found interesting watching this clip was one of the first things that popped in my head, White Sox fans, was that I remember earlier in spring, in the spring training, when Kyle Teal returned from the World Baseball Classic with the hamstring injury that he suffered that landed him on the injured list to start the year. And, oh, by the way, I'll tell you right now, Kyle Teal looks like he's ready to play. Now, listen, he's still got to go. It's still probably a couple weeks away, you know, and he's probably going to have a rehab assignment before he comes back up to the majors. But that's just Kyle's personality. He's bouncing around the clubhouse ready to get after it. Obviously, the White Sox are going to make sure that he's completely ready. But one of the things that I recalled watching this Vinny Pasquantino, shall we say, airing out of Carter Jensen, was Kyle Teal, when he returned to White Sox camp, mentioned in particular one of the cool things for him playing for Team Italy in the World Baseball Classic was having the opportunity to observe Vinny Pasquantino as a leader inside the clubhouse for Team Italy. And I think you heard some of that come through right there, as he is, like, for Pasquantino, it's interesting because he's, I think, 26 years old. So he's obviously been around, and he's a very accomplished player and one of the middle of the order hitters for the Royals. But he has kind of had to take a backseat his entire career to Salvador Perez, who wears the C for the Royals and is widely regarded as one of the best leaders in all of baseball. And so 36-year-old Salvi, Vinny's probably picked up a thing or two from him. And I found it interesting that as Pasquantino is talking about Carter Jensen needing to be a little bit more, you know, on top of things, more accountable, you know, Kyle Teal had mentioned just a couple weeks ago, hey, I got a chance to learn from Vinny Pasquantino as a leader playing for Team Italy. And that was one of the good things that came out of it for Kyle Teal. So that was just something that, you know, dawned on me as I was watching that clip.